Welcome to Authors on the Air. I'm your host, Pam Stack. We're proud to be part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. If you're listening to us live, I hope you click the follow button. Today is a very special episode of Authors on the Air. I had the distinct pleasure of meeting my guest last week at in Delray Beach at a book signing. Robert Crace is an international best-selling author. Most everybody knows him because of his Elvis Cole and Joe Pike books, although he has several best-selling other books as well. Bob Crace is here with me today. Bob, welcome to Authors on the Air. So happy that you're back again.
Pam, it's great to be here. Thanks a lot.
And it was nice to see you, too. You had such a successful book signing in Delray at Murder by the Beach. It was SRO. Congratulations.
Thanks. It was like that through the whole tour, and I really have to say that It's so gratifying and rewarding to see so many people come out now, and people who read the books and are really involved with Elvis Cole and Joe Pike and want to talk. It kind of makes all of this staying alone in a room writing worthwhile.
Well, interesting you mentioned that, because when we were at the book signing, you mentioned that you pretty much will write anywhere, that you kind of carry your stuff with you, and wherever the urge strikes or wherever you plop, that's where you're writing.
Yeah,
I
do. I'm a mobile kind of all-weather writer. I actually find that helps me a lot. It helps my focus and concentration. So I'll start in my office. I have an office at home, but I only work there for 2 or 3 hours. And then I'll go to a coffee shop or a diner, and I typically stay another couple of hours at each location, and end up back at the house. That change of scenery really seems to keep me jacked up and focused on the story, and helps me get more work done.
That's terrific. You know, a lot of writers that I speak to tell me they either have a page count, a word count, a chapter count. Do you just write to get the page, the words down? Is there like a place where you say, okay, enough for today, I've put in my 5,000 words or whatever it happens to be? You don't do that?
I don't do page counts or word counts. What I do think in terms of is the length and feel of a scene, and I try to get roughly half a scene written on a day, on a particular day. That means in 2 days I'll have an entire scene roughed out, and then, you know, maybe third, fourth day I'm rewriting that before I move on. So I really think more in terms of what's happening in the moment for the characters in the story, and try to get to a certain emotional point in that day's work. And at that point, I'm ready to roll on.
I noticed that, you know, I had mentioned to you when we were in the green room, I love reading your books. I read them in order when I first was told that I should be reading Robert Crace. But what I notice more and more as your books are so focused is that a chapter is a story arc in itself. There is a story arc going on in every single chapter. And perhaps is that your intention for every chapter? Because it seems to me that the book moves along at a very brisk pace, but I do find myself going back and rereading some of the dialogue. It's because it's so fascinating to me.
Well, thanks. No,
yeah,
it's a good point. You know, most people, I think, I may never have been asked that before about or have someone pointed out that each chapter, I think of a chapter as a scene, even though there might be two scenes or something in it. But the overall novel itself follows an arc. But within that uber arc, each chapter or scene has an arc of its own. And I work very hard to create that sense. Because that's one of, you know, I'm blessed in that so many people say, well, the books are real page turners. I couldn't stop turning the pages. I think that's a result of how I envision the particular scenes. By the time you get to the end of a scene or end of a chapter, it's at a natural place for a reader to keep pushing forward.
Do you think, Bob, because of your time spent writing for television, episodic television, that has kind of put you in the frame of mind to always have that arc moving forward, the story moving forward? Because it's a different way to write, but it certainly is a sparing way to write. You don't write flowery narrative, which I'm appreciative because I don't want to read that.
I think of my time in television, and I was very, very young when I got involved in TV in the years when I was working on TV. I was a baby writer, but I do think of that as my writing school. You know, I didn't go to any formal school for learning to write. I wasn't an English major or any of those things. But when I got involved in TV, it was it was my good fortune to work on some really terrific shows with some really gifted writers and writer producers, and actors, and I just couldn't help but learn an enormous amount of what went into making really good drama. And I absolutely believe that that had a hand in, I think visually. So that probably, my experiences in TV probably had a hand in shaping how I think about scene construction and character arcs and things like that. And I think it's added immeasurably to my work.
Yeah, you definitely have an economy of words, and I like that. I'm not particularly a literary fiction buff. It's almost too angsty and too flowery for me, and I'm probably not smart enough to understand it. But I definitely like this genre, and you can't go wrong with two lead characters like Elvis and Joe. I found it interesting when you gave your little speech at the bookstore. You said that you don't know what Joe or Elvis look like. You can describe them, their physicality, but you really don't have an image of their faces.
I don't think about that much anymore. When it occurred to me that, in fact, I have never seen their faces. If I were to sit down with a police sketch artist and they were to say, okay, let's come up with a picture of the person you saw committing the crime, being Elvis Cole,
mm-hmm.
I could not provide any description or details about Elvis's face or Joe Pike's face. To me, they're sort of gray. When I realized that, you know, I thought, wow, that's odd. I mean, shouldn't I know? You know, I'm the writer, creator. Shouldn't I know? But I think that that's a way for me to always have them fresh. And also it allows my readers to fill in the blanks. I mean, there are blanks. And I'm not smart enough to say that I've done this by design, because it didn't. But I think what happens is it allows readers to more readily invest themselves in the character, and each individual reader to create his or her own Elvis Cole and Joe Pike. Everyone's is a little bit different because everyone's mm-hmm. unique to the reader. But then they and I collaborate, and the end result is their own special Elvis Cole. And I just think that's the best thing in the world. I love that.
I have to ask you, what is the significance of the Pinocchio clock?
Well, Elvis Cole is known for having some Disney artifacts in his office.
Yes,
The Pinocchio clock on his wall. Its eyes talk back and forth, you know, with the passing seconds,
right.
Passing time.
Right.
And a couple of other things. I use it for humor, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But it also does signify something about Elvis. It, you know, Elvis is a guy who's had a shaky, traumatic childhood. When
yes.
he was a young man, he was a U.S. Army Ranger, and he saw pretty intense combat and more horrible experiences. And at some point, Elvis, I think, consciously decided, I'm not going to let my history destroy me. I'm not going to let all the bad experiences I've had in my life hold me back. I am going to hold on to what's special about life and what's optimistic about life and what's joyful about life. And the Pinocchio clock and the other Disney things represent that to I think me and to him. It's his way of hanging on to an element of innocence. And that's why he becomes a heroic figure, I think, because he's the person now who people go to when they're in dire straits or they're in deep trouble. And when he invests in a client, like he does in The Wanted, he's all in. He will go forever to preserve that special and wonderful part of their life, too, or to give it back to them if it's been taken away.
That kind of is a great segue to talk about Lucy and Ben, because he very much loves this woman, but because of his work, she can't stay with him. But that doesn't mean that he is not wanting to have a relationship, and he's matured so much now that he really loves this woman, and more than that, his relationship with his kind of pseudo son has really changed a lot, and it's changed him, hasn't it?
It has. You know, Elvis is a guy, this took me a few books to realize too, but yeah, you know, Elvis Cole's, you know, he's a relatively young single guy, but there, he's never been married, but there is a part of him that very much, I think, wants to be in love. He wants to be married. He wants to have a family. I mean, these are like common urges among, I think, most people.
Yes.
You know, you want someone to share your life with. He does.
Sure.
And it's never quite worked out for him. And then he finally, on a case he was working on in Louisiana, he met this woman, Lucy Chenier, who's an attorney down there, and she was divorced. She had a young son named Ben Chenier, and Elvis and Lucy fell in love, and so they went so far as, like, she left Louisiana and moved out to L.A., and they were all going to live happily ever after, but that did not work out because of the nature of her past and the nature of his present, and she thought it'd be safer for Ben to take him back to Louisiana, which is what's happened. But I think you're right. Elvis does. I mean, there's a part of him that still pines for her. I mean, he's trying to get on with his life. He's dating other women, but there is a part that is still in love with Lucy. He wishes it had worked out between them, but he still very much loves her son. You know, her son Ben is sort of the kid he didn't have. And so Elvis works very hard to maintain that relationship, even though it's a long-distance relationship. So we'll have to see where that goes in future books.
Yeah, I have noticed that this story, The Wanted, most definitely laid that out about how he feels more than any other story. And you do, you know, there is a gentle unfolding of his personality and his inner thoughts and feelings over the course of the books, if one is to read them in order like I did. But also, I think this one shows his character more than any other book that I've read of yours. I know that you're writing again, you're finishing up writing. Your next book in the Elvis and Joe collaboration will focus back now on Joe. There was one book that you really laid everything out about his background, about what, you know, just how he came to be who he is. And it was particularly interesting that he has such a strong code of honor, although he's very protective of Elvis and their clients. He wouldn't lie. He wouldn't talk bad about his fellow cops when he was on the force. He's such a fascinating character. Who would you say?
I find him fascinating, too. And
yeah.
It actually took me seven books, my first seven novels, to work up the nerve to write more about Joe Pike, to peel back the layers of the Pike onion. You know, because when I first started these things, you read them in order, so you know.
Yes.
You know, Pike was like the guest star. and he, you know, he revealed almost nothing of himself. He's very he's a very internal person, very monosyllabic,
yes.
self-contained. But I knew that there was just a deep, I mean, I had this deep well of interest and fascination in him. I just found the guy a great character, and I wanted to write the scenes that would illustrate who he truly was and how he came to be the person he is. And that became my eighth novel, L.A. Requiem, where
right.
we really get into to Joe Pike, and we see his horrible childhood and how he recreated himself into this, you know, adult man who really is impervious to that kind of abuse now, hence the internalization and his physical abilities. In many ways, you know, that's something that Elvis and Joe have in common, though they deal with it differently. They both come from very turbulent backgrounds. But Elvis is very verbal, and he's funny, and he's dealing with it in his way. Joe, on the other hand, pretty much checked out of the human race in many ways.
Yeah, he kind of did. Sure.
Yeah, he did. You know,
I'm sorry, go ahead. He lives by himself. Even talk about his – do you ever talk about where Joe lives? I'm trying to remember because it's always about
– Yeah, because the scenes are mostly set when we're in their personal lives, the scenes are mostly in Elvis's home, which is an A-frame in the Hollywood Hills.
The A-frame.
But in a couple of the books, I do go to Joe's. Joe lives in a condo in Culver City.
Oh, okay.
And it's like him. It's super austere. There's not much in it because for a long period of his life, when he was grown, after he was after he got out of the Marines and after he was an LAPD officer. He became a private military contractor, meaning, you know, a mercenary. And,
sure.
And he would deploy all over the planet, and he'd have to leave. So he consequently doesn't have much in his life because he would never know when he would have to leave it behind and how long he'd be gone. So that's an appropriate way for Joe. I don't think Joe wants the same things that Elvis Cole wants.
Well, so that's another good segue. There is one book where he starts to have interest in one of the females in the books, and it turns out that Elvis has to kill her.
Yep.
Because she's not such a nice person. That to me was a very telling point in Joe Pike's life. It also was telling to me another thing that just stuck with me, and this is just me, Bob, I'm sure, but that he always wears sunglasses. His eyes are very sensitive to light. Am I picking it up right the way you intended to be?
He does have extremely sensitive eyes, hence the sunglasses, but it's also another way for him to wall himself off.
Right,
to shield
himself.
He wears sunglasses all the time, but he doesn't do it to be cool or effective. It's actually a way, I think deep down, it's a way for Joe to hide from other people. You can't see his eyes. You don't know what he's thinking. You don't know what he's looking at. They're just these two black shiny orbs sort of there. This is the lenses of the sunglasses, like the back of a beetle.
It's interesting. Can you tell us a little bit about what else is happening with you? Are you going to do another standalone, or are you going to pick up on the canine story at any time? Because you did this beautiful story that I loved. And will you be bringing those characters back, do you think?
Yeah, a couple of books ago I created I wrote a book called Suspect.
Right.
In that book, it was intended to be a standalone book, meaning just a standalone thriller, totally not part of the Elvis Cole universe, about an LAPD canine platoon officer, Scott James, and his German Shepherd, Maggie, who's a police dog, of course. But the fact of the matter, I mean, I just loved them so much. I enjoyed the writing experience so much that I just folded them into the Elvis Cole world.
Right.
And the book that immediately followed that, last year's book, The Promise, I just brought all four of my main characters together. You know, Elvis and Joe were there, and then Scott and Maggie were there, and I just combined them all. Which was, for me, great fun. Now, I don't know that I will bring all four characters together again, because it was great fun, but it was also a hell of a hard job to pull that off.
I imagine. Sure.
But I will write, in the future, I will write more stories with Scott and Maggie.
If
no other reason, because I just love writing that dog so much.
Yeah, it's a great character. I love that you don't anthropomorphize the dog. You know, this is the dog is the dog. The dog's not going to have thoughts and things like that going on. So, you know, the dog is the dog, which is great.
No, yeah, and she's a real dog.
She's a real
important.
Dog.
That was very
Absolutely.
Important to me. I didn't want to write a cartoon dog. I didn't want to anthropomorphize the dog. You know, here's the dog
right.
thinking human thoughts. Here's the dog,
right.
you know, talking out of the side of her mouth, smoking a stogie, you know, playing cards,
right.
you know, farting on you know, on cue. I didn't want to use her for that, for comic effect. I wanted a real, actual dog. So the amount of research I did was enormous. But
yeah.
I think it paid off because the, you know, my intention was to create a real dog and illustrate how dogs think about and feel about the world around them as accurately as I could, based upon our current understanding of dog psychology, dog cognition, et cetera, et cetera, and I think I did a really good job of that. I got a huge positive feedback from
it,
people.
It was one of my favorites too. It was
I love her. She's terrific,
yeah.
and she'll be back.
Good. I'm glad to hear that. I want to just talk to you a little bit about growing up in New Orleans or in Louisiana. I don't know if it was New Orleans or not, but in Louisiana.
Yeah,
do you think any of pardon me?
It was Baton Rouge.
Oh, okay. Do any of your experiences follow you in your books, your experience growing up in Louisiana, other than you've set Lucy and Ben there? And maybe that's your homage to your birthplace. But do any of those come from a family of people working in the oil industry and cops and everything?
Yeah.
Did that influence your writing?
Well, it must have. I mean, I don't set any of the novels, or I don't base any of the novels on specific events or specific stories I was told as a kid. But writers are cannibals, and I think this is something that all writers, on some level, have to share. You know, you cannibalize your life. You use the experiences you've had, great or small. You use the things you feel, again, great or small, and you transmogrify those things into fiction. They become little, you know, bits, pieces, shadings, colors, what have you, as part of your fiction. So, though I couldn't tell you offhand, oh yeah, here's what came from, you know, when I was 12 years old, I couldn't do that.
Right.
But I do believe it must have had a bearing on what I do now and why I do it.
Interesting. I want to kind of move away from this, and because I'm taking up your time. I know your throat is scratchy from all the tours you've been on. I'm going to ask you if you will play Final Five with me. It's five quick questions and five quick answers.
Okay, I'll try.
Okay, it's kind of almost known as, you know, also known as Stump the Author, but this should be easy because it's all about you.
All right.
So, what do you do when you're not writing? What do you do? I mean, I know you enjoy writing, but what is your fun thing to do?
I go for early morning hikes in the canyons here in LA in the darkness. I do that for fun. Fly airplanes for fun. Well, that's about it.
So, whose book are you reading right now?
Let's see. I'm reading, it hasn't been published yet, but I'm reading Greg Hurwitz's new book, Hellbent.
Yeah, it's a great one, isn't it? I love it.
Yep, so far.
I love that book. I like all of Greg's work. He's pretty good.
He is.
what would we be?
You're breaking up on me, Pam. I don't hear you.
Oh, I'm sorry. What would we be surprised to learn about you? like
what would be,
peel the layers of Bob Crace right now.
that I'm a serious barbecue guy. I love to smoke meat and make barbecue.
Good God, you and Lee Goldberg, huh? So that's cool. I like that. Do you ever think about writing in another genre?
No, I love this genre. You know what? I have a great freedom with what I write. I'm fortunate. I could write whatever I wanted to write and do. So that's probably why there's been 17 Elvis Cole novels, but altogether 21 books. So whenever I get the urge to write something different, it becomes one of the standalone thrillers that I write. I always do it at the most inopportune time, it seems, but these are the things I'm drawn to. I mean, this is why I do what I do. I love this stuff. So, you know, I don't have any hidden fantasy about writing, a far future science fiction novel or a historical vampire novel. I don't. If I wanted to, I would. I love this, so I write this.
In an occasional nod to one of my other favorite writers, you and Michael Connelly oftentimes do a little wink-wink in each other's books. True or false?
That's true. True. look, I'm a huge fan of Michael's. I love his books. Huge fan of Harry Bosch. I've read all of his books. I've read them since the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And for a long time... we both lived here and got to know each other pretty well, and it just seemed like a fun thing that eventually developed. So in one of his books, Elvis makes a little unnamed appearance, and in one of my books, Harry makes a little unnamed appearance. I mean, the astute reader will recognize the character.
We'll know exactly who it is. Yeah.
Yeah, you'll
the
know
local
exactly
PI that drives the yellow
it.
Corvette. You know,
yeah.
It was really cute. I enjoyed that. What's next, Bob? You're finishing up your book, or do you have others lined up in your brain?
Well, not so much lined up. I'm writing next year's book is going to be a Joe Pike novel. I'm working on it now. And then after that, I'm not sure. I do have three or four fairly solid formed up ideas that I'm kind of hot for. I really won't pick which one to write next until I'm finishing up this book. But it'll likely be the one after the Pike novel will likely be an Elvis novel, and then the one after that will likely be a Maggie novel. No promises, but that's just the way I'm feeling today.
How do you choose when you have so many ideas that are pretty solid floating around? What's the deciding factor? Your mood, how well the story solidifies as you're thinking about it, research? What's the one thing that kind of tips you over
probably,
to know what you're going to write?
Yeah, probably whichever one, because of how it's developed at that point in time, it'll be
mm-hmm.
whichever one has the most emotional appeal to me. And that's kind of, that's actually how I've decided on each of the books. You know, there's something about these stories that I tell that's emotionally moving to me. I find it's like it's imperative for me to tell this story or this particular story. And,
it's interesting.
And, you know, it feels like a fire that's burning, and it gets hotter and hotter. And then, okay, that's the one. That's the one I'm going to commit to. And then that'll be the particular story that I write at the time.
It's fascinating to me. I'm so glad that you took time out of your at least busy, busy day, especially after a long tour, to come on the show again. And I hope when the next book comes out, you'll come back and talk about it. Thank you so much for writing great, great fiction. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you, Pam. It's been a lot of fun. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much. Be well, and we'll talk again soon.
All
right,
Bob. You got it.
All right. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
And that's our show for today, friends. Tomorrow I'm with Preston Child for City of Endless Night, fantastic title and a great book. And also with Steve Loudon, Hang Time, the third in his Greg Salem book. Thanks for being with me, everybody. Thank you, Mom and Dad. Good night.